Get it into Perry. Gonna have to hurry. Perry elevates for the win off the back rim. And Wichita State survives.
Proud of the guys. They battled for 40 minutes. And that's what it takes to win on the road in the AAC. We started out the game really good. Dexter Dennis had a big time game. First double-double for anybody on our team. He did a great job of making open shots. He did a great job of guarding a big time scorer in Mahan. In the second half, you know, they started to battle back. They came back, they made a good run. They were changing their defenses. And finally, we started to execute. And, you know, we closed the game out. We turned it over late, and that's something we haven't been doing. But those guys just kept battling.
Wichita State does survive a scare on the road. They are a bubble team for the NCAA tournament. Shockers are now 12-4. They're 8-2 in the AAC, second place in the conference behind Houston. Shockers win in Orlando last night. They've won four in a row, but they barely win. But a win is a win. 61-60 was that final last night. Coming up, the Royals make a big trade yesterday. We'll go over that coming up. I'm pretty excited. I'm finally some baseball news. And what about the Chiefs? Could they make a trade for a very talented offensive lineman? We'll go over that here in a moment. All right, we just did receive word here just a moment ago of a change to our broadcast schedule. So yeah. It's the world we live in. Although this one's not COVID-related. This is weather-related. So Dusty will go through the changes in regards to games being played tonight because some schools that were going to play tomorrow night are deciding to move up to Thursday. Many schools made that decision yesterday. Others are just now catching up, I guess, on the weather forecast to alter it today. So,
yeah, the games we know for sure that have been moved right now are Thunder Ridge at Tesk, at Sylvan Lucas at Wilson, and Southeast Slint at Minneapolis, and most importantly, our game that was scheduled to be on Z96 Point to the Lake tomorrow night, Lakeside and Southern Cloud in Downs, has been moved up to tonight as well. So we still plan on covering that for you here this evening. Girls pregame for varsity will start at 4:50, so it's an early start here tonight with the girls varsity at 5 o'clock, and then the boys will follow here tonight on Katy Country 94. Instead of Z96.3, because we have KU basketball coming up on Z96.3 to Lake tonight. So, again, Katy Country 94 will get things started with pregame at 4:50, girls varsity at 5, and then the boys game follows Southern Cloud at Lakeside. That also affects our locker room chats, which are originally scheduled to be on Katy Country 94 tonight, so we'll move those to Z96.3 to Lake.
Oh, okay. I thought we were going to, thought we just discussed that we could put it on.
On D,
and we just go 4:15.
D ahead of time.
We forgive everyone out there listening.
We literally just found out
1 minute before going on the air here on the show that Southern Cloud Lakeside's been moved up a day. So we are scrambling to figure it all out. So we'll just move the locker room, make it easier for us and for our listeners. We're just going to move up the locker room chats an hour. So it said 5:15, it's going to be 4:15. How's that?
Perfect.
Then we'll have the news and everything at 5, or no, we won't. It'll take us, we'll go about 4:15, 4:10, I guess, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Whatever. Well, you know what? Pregame 4:15. See, we're still doing the math on all this stuff.
After the 4 o'clock hour,
let's just go 4 o'clock. We'll go 4:05. How's that? 4:05.
The news plays at the top of the hour.
Perfect. 4:05. There you go. 4:05. We nailed it. 4:05 tonight on Katy Country 94 and katycountry94.com, our locker room chat. So bumped up about an hour and 5 minutes. And then that'll lead you right into pregame for Dusty.
Yes.
Nailed it. Southern Cloud at Lakeside. There we go.
My brain stopped working halfway through everything.
It's okay. Dusty, when guys have been up for a few more hours than you have, the brain works a little quicker, so I'm just messing with you. But yes.
Making adjustments on the fly.
In fairness to Dusty, we went through three scenarios within like 30 seconds back and forth on two stations, so I can understand the confusion. But yes, we'll just keep it all on Katy Country 94 tonight with the locker room chats and then Lakeside Southern Cloud. That way we have Z freed up for KU Iowa State tonight at 5:30 pregame for KU and Iowa State. More on that in a little bit. Okay.
Yeah, Hill City at Smith Center tonight, too. That's just a makeup game. That wasn't a rescheduled or a scheduled game from tomorrow moved to today. So Hill City at Smith Center, the Mid-Continent going on this evening as well. So that's a look at the schedule. Latest schedules can always be found at ncksports.com. If you know of anybody else that has moved games, you can let us know. Anybody else that has done that, we appreciate you getting that info to us.
As soon as possible.
Yes,
be great.
That's That's tonight's schedule.
Yeah, okay. All right. Let's see, Athlete of the Week?
Yeah, Athletes of the Week. Rock Hill Seniors Davion McDonald and Jared Gillett have been named the NCCSports.com Cunningham Telephone and Cable Athletes of the Week. Both players were key factors in helping Rock Hills to three straight wins over the past week. Last Friday, they won 54-52 in overtime over Lakeside and followed it up with a 57-16 win over Teskat Monday night in Mankato. Finished a three-game stretch of 60-55 overtime win at Natoma Tuesday night. McDonald's been the leading scorer throughout the season, averaging 17.5 over the last three games, shooting 51% from the floor and 80% from the free throw line. Had 22 against Lakeside Friday, 20 against Teskat on Monday, and then 11 points, 5 assists, 4 rebounds against Natoma on Tuesday night. He's now averaging 17 points on the season and shooting 70% from the free throw line. Leads the team with 22 made three-pointers. Gillett, the second leading scorer on the season for the Grizzlies, in overtime went over Natoma Tuesday night, scored a career-high 30 points, 5 of 9 from three-point land, 9 of 11 from the free throw line. And with the 30-point performance, he's now averaging 19.5 points over these past three games for Rock Hills. Against Lakeside on Friday, had 19 points, 5 boards, and 4 assists. And then Monday against Teskat, a very solid line with 9 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists. Gillett now averaging just under 15 points, 6.5 rebounds, 2.5 assists a game, shooting 40% from the floor, has made to 18 three-pointers, which is second best on the team, and is shooting 75% from the charity stripe this season. So again, congratulations to Jared Gillett and Davion McDonald, our co-athletes of the week from Rock Hills High School and NCKSSports.com, Cunningham Telephone and Cable. You can read more at NCKSSports.com. Also there on the website, the newest Kansas Wrestling Coaches Association rankings are posted. So if you'd like to look at those, you can find the full rankings there. As far as the area is concerned, Republic County number 3 as a team, Beloit number 10. And some individuals that are ranked, Trey Barrientes of Sylvan Lucas still number 2 at 285 pounds. Bentley Montgomery of Smith Center number 4 at 126. Bruno Walker number 4 at 182. Tate Cadle's number 5 at 160. And 170 pounds, Hunter Prohaska is number 6 for Beloit. So three Beloit wrestlers there ranked as well this week. Again, you can find the full rankings at nckssports.com.
All right, we just updated broadcast schedule there at nckssports.com and let you know what time the locker room chats and all that here tonight as well. And we do look forward to those regional wrestling reports coming up tomorrow around 3:30. What opens you up so you can do all the wrestling right here. Perfect.
Take care of the wrestling.
Love it when a plan comes together.
Exactly.
Love it.
It doesn't hurt us. It just makes me get to cracking here on prep. When
you better
hurry
and get your prep done. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you'll get it done. And you only have to go to down, so that's not very far. All right, how about the Royals making news? You know, Patrick Mahomes, the Chiefs lose the Super Bowl. Mahomes had toe surgery yesterday. It was successful surgery. He should be good. He'll have rehab, be ready to go next season. That's good news. And then the Royals land a left fielder to replace Alex Gordon, who had retired. And, you know, when I first heard about the deal, I was excited. Then I read a little bit about what Benintendi has done, and then I'm at the last year, and I'm like, not excited. Then I read of what he's done his last full season, and that he's under contract for the next 2 years, and he's only 26, and I get excited again. So I don't know which way to look at this one. I think it's a low-risk move by the Royals, and that's the thing I like about it. The Royals have been looking for a left-handed batter to replace Alex Gordon in their lineup. The Royals have searched all offseason, and guess what? They found their guy. The Royals completed a three-team trade with the Red Sox and the Mets last night, acquiring Andrew Benintendi from Boston while sending outfielder Franchy Cordero and two players to be named to the Red Sox. Outfield prospect Khalil Lee is going to the Mets, while New York is sending two players to the Red Sox. Lee was the Royals' number 8 prospect per Major League Baseball's pipeline rankings. The Royals also get $2.8 million from the Red Sox to help cover some of Andrew Benintendi's salary, which is actually, he signed a 2-year, $10 million deal. So it'd be arbitration in a couple of years. So he's under contract for the next two. He's owed $6.6 in 2021. He comes with 2 years of club control. And like I said, the Red Sox are giving him $2.8 million to help cover some of that. Dayton Moore, general manager of the Royals, said, and I quote, Andrew Benintendi is a proven talent at this point in time in his career, been a part of playoffs. He's been a proven winner, a World Series champion. He gets on base. He does a lot of things that you need players to do in your lineup if you're going to win. He fits really well with our current group and a lot of the things we were able to execute this offseason. Benintendi was drafted by the Red Sox with a number 7 overall pick out of the University of Arkansas in the 2015 MLB draft. His last full season in 2018, he had 16 homers and 87 RBIs. And he racked up 4.5 wins above replacement, which is a number a lot of people go by. And he finished second in American League Rookie of the Year voting behind the Yankees' Aaron Judge as recently as 2017. He had injuries last year. He played in just the 14 games in the shortened season. He was 4 for 52 at the plate, hit 103, 1 RBI. But keep in mind that the Royals are confident he can return to form, both from a health perspective and a performance standpoint. Otherwise, why would they make it this move? He's only 26. Very interesting move by the Royals. I like the move. Benintendi is seen as a doubles machine. And we know at Kauffman Stadium, remember George Brett, left-handed batter, he had tons of doubles at Kauffman Stadium, hitting the gaps. He's got good speed. He's a very good defensive outfielder. He has had a lot of assists playing left field. That sounds familiar to a guy the Royals just had retire, and Alex Gordon. They didn't give up a lot. They got some help financially to pay for the guy's deal. He's under control for 2 years. So if you're looking at the Royals lineup right now, Whit Merrifield probably, this is a projected lineup, Whit Merrifield would lead off and play right field. Alberto Mondesi would be at bat second, play short. Salvador Perez, your catcher, bat in third. Remember, the Royals picked up free agent first baseman Carlos Santana from the Indians. He'd bat cleanup. Jorge Soler would be your full-time DH then. He'd be batting fifth. Benintendi, your left fielder, bat sixth. Hunter Dozier at third base would bat seventh. Wow, that's pretty good. And then Michael Taylor playing center eight. That was a free agent pickup from the Nationals. Although they could have the Olivares kid they like too, might platoon there. And then batting ninth and playing second base will probably be Nicky Lopez and maybe somebody else will rotate there in a platoon situation. And then, of course, you've got the Royals' young pitchers that are coming up the ranks. So, and you got Keller that's still in his, obviously, in his prime. Duffy's still a serviceable starting pitcher. And then, of course, they goodness gracious, I'm going blank. Who's the rookie that came up last year and had the pitch and did a decent job? The rookie pitcher for the Royals.
That's a good question.
Well, we had Bubich was one, but the other one.
Was it Cower?
Singer.
Brady Singer.
And Cower, they got in the minors.
Get my brain back into baseball mode.
Brady Singer, of course, had a no-hitter, so you know he's got good stuff. So, and the Royals, the bullpen, they got Wade Davis, which... whether he makes a team, we don't know. They re-signed Greg Holland, and they still got some money now. They could go get Trevor Rosenthal, bring him back, and all of a sudden the Royals have that power-throwing bullpen again because they got Josh Domont, who might very well be their closer. I like what the Royals are doing. I will tell you the concern I have, though. I look at this Royals lineup, and I do wonder about, and maybe it's just you have to adapt, but in the 14, 15 years the Royals won the World Series once and went to the World Series in 14, lost in 7 games to the Giants, the Royals put the ball in play. And this team, I see lots of strikeouts. Like Merrifield, he makes contact. Mondesi strikes out more than he probably should, but he's getting better, still a young player. Salvi strikes out, we know that. Santana strikes out. Soler strikes out a lot in bunches, but he can hit the ball 2,000 miles. Benintendi, his first couple years in the league, really did a great job putting the ball in play. The last couple years, he's been striking out more often. Mm-hmm. So that's a concern. Dozier, at times, can strike out. Taylor, the center fielder guy from the Nationals, good speed, good defensive player in center, he doesn't have a high contact rate. So, I mean, that is a bit of a concern, putting the ball in play, per se. But I like the lineup. It looks good on paper, but it doesn't matter how good it looks on paper until you actually play. But the Royals are making a run to be competitive this year. They're not waiting until 2022.
Yeah. Hey, I like it.
You like the trade? I mean, they don't give up a ton. They give up a prospect.
Oh, like
that might
trade,
come back and bite you. But Benintendi is a proven guy that's been on a World Series team and played well in the postseason. And he's a guy that could be a younger leader in the clubhouse, too.
Yeah. No, I don't have a problem with the trade at all.
Yeah.
I like it, and I like the fact that they're at least trying. Let's see what happens.
Yeah. And like I said, didn't give up too much unless Khalil Lee turns into a stud with the Mets. That would be the only downside. There are two players to be named later, but usually the players to be named later aren't significant big-time prospects.
No.
Okay, so the Royals make a trade. They get Andrew Benintendi from the Boston Red Sox. There's a Pro Bowl tackle that wants to be traded. And right away, if you're a Chiefs fan, you go, really? It appears the Baltimore Ravens could be losing a starter along the offensive line this offseason as their Pro Bowl offensive tackle, Orlando Brown Jr., has made it clear that he wants to be traded. Brown has been given permission to seek a trade, and multiple teams are interested in his services. There's a good chance a trade that makes sense for all parties involved comes together. However, Brown is talented, has a strong relationship with the Ravens franchise, who would certainly want good value in return for him. Brown was selected in the third round of the 2018 NFL draft and started 10 games in his rookie season at right tackle. He started all 16 games on the right side in 2019 and made his first Pro Bowl. And then this past season, he was at right tackle, and then the Pro Bowl left tackle Stanley went down. He moved to left tackle, and that's where Brown wants to play. The Ravens project him to go back to right tackle. He's only 24 years of age. that's a guy that, you know, would be a great anchor on your offensive line and be great to protect Mr. Patrick Mahomes. But there's a couple problems with this. One, you'd have to give up a lot, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Two, the Ravens are going to trade with the Chiefs. The Ravens are one of the top contenders against the Chiefs. That would be a weird trade. So I don't think it'll happen. But there is a guy that's on the market. So just something to keep in mind. I understand why the Ravens just say, yeah, we'll allow you to seek a trade. I'd be like, dude, we're going to keep you. But whatever.
Yeah.
Interesting. KU's in action tonight. They're 13-7 overall, 7-5 in the Big 12. They continue its two-game homestand against Iowa State. Iowa State 2-12, 0-9. That's tonight, 6 o'clock. Pregame at 5:30 on Z96.3. The Lake. KU's going to play Iowa State twice in 3 days. They'll play Iowa State again on Saturday in Ames at 2 o'clock before playing in Manhattan against K-State next Wednesday. And Iowa State, even though they have not won a Big 12 game, they're 0-9, 2-12 overall. They've had to stop due to COVID, had some players out of the lineup, and now recently they've been playing teams very close, very competitive, and Bill Self has been paying attention and noticed.
Well, I actually think they're better than they've been at any time this year. You know, you look at their last three games, you know, West Virginia handles us, they lose by 4. TCU, who's obviously shown they can play with just about anybody, they lose by a basket. Oklahoma, who's been red hot, it's a 2-possession game in the last 3 minutes, and they end up losing by 7. So I think that the scores certainly indicate that they're playing better, and they got their full complement of guys. This isn't the same team that played Mississippi State. You know, this isn't the same team that played some of those other games where they didn't have their full complement of people. They've been hit pretty hard by the COVID situation, and as evidenced by the number of games that they have missed.
All right, so if KU would win tonight and then win at Iowa State on Saturday, KU could be back in the top 25 after a one-week absence, if you care about that. But these are two games that KU should win. But I am having a hard time believing they're going to win both. I think beating a team twice in 3 days, especially when KU's not a juggernaut this year. I mean, they're decent, but they're not like they were last year. If this was KU's team last year against Iowa State, I'd probably say, yeah, they're going to win both. But I don't know, for some reason, I'm seeing a split here. And Iowa State's playing better basketball.
Yeah.
I'm seeing a split. They win tonight, and they lose in Ames on Saturday.
Yeah, I could see that for sure.
And that would be Iowa State's first Big 12 win, and that'd be a bad loss on the resume for KU, and that'd be their only bad loss because their 7 losses are against the net top 20 in the country, all 7. That's why KU will have a higher seed than people think they should get in the tournament.
Exactly.
Strength of schedule.
Yeah. That one won't look good, but, it's tough to beat them twice in 3 days here. So, I think they're going to split too, actually.
KU freshman Bryce Thompson has started practicing again, sidelined for the past several weeks, in all but one of the Jayhawks' past 11 games with back and finger injuries. He's nearing a return to the court. He could play as soon as tonight against Iowa State. Self said Thompson, who broke his right index finger in KU's loss to Oklahoma State on January 12th, practiced for the first time on Tuesday and was full speed while doing so. So that would help a little bit, perhaps, for KU. I don't know how much it'll help initially, but we'll ask Brian Haney about that coming up in just a little bit, the voice of the KU Jayhawks. So you've been following the NBA. Last night, we enjoyed watching. My oldest son and I like watching Trae Young and Luka Doncic. They were traded for one another. They played each other last night. Trae Young, 25 points, 15 assists, and some deep threes. Doncic, who really honestly had an off night, had 28 points, 10 rebounds, and 10 assists. You know you're a star when you have an off night, and you look up and you're like, oh, triple-double.
Yeah.
He came into the game with 8 minutes going to fourth quarter. He had 5 rebounds, 5 assists, and I told my son, I said, he'll have a triple-double. And at the end of the night, 28 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists, and he didn't have, like, for him, probably was an average night. That's how good he is. And Trae Young's fun to watch as well, 25 points and 15 assists. Trae Young doesn't get enough credit for how good of a passer he is. He is really, really good. He is still a liability defensively because he's just shorter, so he went up against Jalen Brunson, and Brunson taller and backed him down a few times. Exciting game, and the Hawks had a chance to win it on the final shot, but it didn't go down, and so the Mavs won 118-117. The Mavs are a very talented team, and yet one of the worst teams in the Western Conference right now. So kind of, they're out of the playoffs. They wouldn't even be in the play-in in the top 10. Mavericks are seeded 11th right now. So you'd think they'll get it figured out. So here's my question for Dusty. Who's the biggest threat to the Lakers in the NBA? Who's the team that the biggest threat to knock off the Lakers? Who is it? Is it somebody from the West or is it somebody from the East? Man, is there anybody legitimately you think can knock off the Lakers? Because right now, the Jazz are the best team in the West at 20-5. The Lakers are 20-6, won in overtime last night. The Clippers are 18-8. And then you got the Suns, who beat the Bucks last night. The Suns are fun to watch. They're only going to get better with Booker and Paul, and DeAndre Ayton's playing great. The Blazers are in the five spot, and they've been missing C.J. McCollum. They've been able to hang on. They'll get better when he comes back. The Spurs, your Spurs have moved up to the sixth spot. The Nuggets are starting to find themselves. They're at the seven. Remember, they went to the Western Conference Finals a year ago. The Warriors, you know, no Klay Thompson, but they're still right there at the eighth spot. Curry's playing great. Oubre's starting to finally play well. The Grizzlies, after the injuries of Ja Morant, he's back. They're at the ninth spot. The Kings are a talented young team. They're in the 10th spot. And then there's the 11th spot, the Mavericks. And then there's the Pelicans with Zion. And the Rockets are starting to come on with John Wall, starting to find themselves without James Harden. And the West is absolutely loaded with the exception of the Timberwolves.
Mm-hmm.
The Thunder, 10-14, towards the bottom. And then the East, it's the Sixers are playing really good basketball. The Bucks are the 2 seed. The Nets are the 3. They did win last night. Finally held somebody under 100. The Celtics are the 4 at 12-11. The Raptors, I didn't realize, are under 500 at 12-13. Yeah. They're the 5 seed. And then the Pacers are the 6. And then the Hornets are the 7, the Hawks are the 8, the Knicks are a 9, and the Bulls are a 10. And we mentioned the top 10 because that's they're going to have a play-in situation again like they did last year in the bubble. And then one of the surprises I didn't realize, the Miami Heat are 10-14, and they're right now in the 11th spot. So think about this. The Dallas Mavericks made it to the Western Conference semifinals a year ago, took the Clippers to 6 games. Right now, they wouldn't even be in the play-in tournament. And the Miami Heat made the NBA Finals, wouldn't even be in the play-in tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Now, granted, that's 24 games out of what? They're playing 70-some this year?
I think it's just 72. I think they just took it.
So we're only at the third mark, the one-third mark. So there's a long way to go. But is there any team out there that you think can knock off the Lakers in a seven-game series?
I don't buy Utah right now yet.
Not buying them?
They're not good.
They're good.
They're good, but in a seven-game series, I don't know.
I know.
So the Clippers are the only team you still kind of look at that I feel like maybe – could if everything goes right for them.
Yeah, I think the Clippers could maybe take the Lakers out in 7. I don't see anybody else.
No.
I don't see anybody else. I'd say the Clippers are still their biggest competition. I would agree with you. So that's a look at the NBA. Go to NBA.com for more information there.